Jetzt live. Meine Hallo. Frau.
Should I directly start?
Nein, ist noch nicht rübergeschaltet. Warte.
Aber du magst Intro, gell?
Ja, ja.
Okay, warte.
Hi, my name is Sebastian Becker. I'm with Stefan Gebhardt. Stefan is responsible for the cloud infrastructure of EMNIFI, a German-based provider for cellular IoT connectivity. He received his PhD from the University of Würzburg on the topic of software-based networking and holds several AWS certifications. At EMNIFI, he helps to build and run the software-based mobile core network running on AWS with all its amenities and challenges. His company became a 99% only cloud company after the latest project to help or to meet the growing scalability and reliability requirements of the interconnections between their AWS-based deployments and multiple carriers. BGP peerings had to move to AWS. His talk is about the challenges and how he solved the integration puzzle of the physical equipment into the existing workflows and tools. Stefan, the stage is yours.
Thanks for the introduction, Sebastian. I'm happy to talk about the latest project that we did at EMNIFI. And I didn't submit this talk because I think we have built the absolutely perfect solution. I submitted it because I think that we worked on a topic that is probably relevant to larger parts of this community, and we approached it with a team of people having a probably different background that most of you have here. If you have solved similar things and think you have built it better or have any input for us, I'd be super happy to receive your message. So that we can later improve our own setup. The title says something about a cloudy mindset. I mean, what do I mean by that? Let me look a bit back. That's myself 5 years ago during my time at the university, research on software-based networking. And yeah, okay, also SDN runs in the end of some form of hardware. So we're dealing a lot with open flow switches, with servers running OpenStack deployments. I did CCNA, so I think I have a bit of a domain knowledge and experience dealing with physical equipment, but I admit I never ran really a router in production environment. A similar experience, I would say, in the Type3 open source project where I was part of the server administration team for a couple of years. We ran the open source infrastructure for this project on bare metal servers because bare metal servers are cheap and our time was cheap, our spare time. I think, and because we have built everything based on open source software, I think we could have delivered things maybe a bit faster if we would have sold our soul to Atlassian also. But I think this mindset, okay, it should be open source when we're an open source project, I think it's totally fine and shows confidence for an open source project. Still, I think we could have delivered things faster to the rest of the company. 2017, I then joined EMNIFI, back then a startup offering IoT connectivity for cellular IoT connectivity. And as this is offered as a cloud service, all the infrastructure also runs as a cloud service on AWS. But the nice thing is our legacy already runs, at least in AWS. So is this now a better world than companies that rely on on-premise infrastructure running their own data center? Certainly not. Totally clear that everybody has different conditions or requirements based from customers and maybe does not want to move into a public cloud. But the one thing that helped this to understand me is actually trying to focus a bit more on generating business value. And there, I think really running things on AWS helps us. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that we run on AWS so that AWS replaces broken hard drives. I mean that we run, rely on managed services as much as possible, so that AWS runs database clusters for us and fix them if they break. They run container services, somewhat reliable network. I mean, all those things, yeah, we solve it by giving them money and save our time. And that's for me the important thing, that we focus on building the things that we can't buy somewhere else, because many, many platform services can be already bought just for some money at AWS. How does it fit in there that we are suddenly buying hardware and need to integrate this in our otherwise cloudy environment? Let me tell you the story about this by giving you a bit of context. And then I want to talk about how we deploy to these routers and how we are monitoring them as closely as possible to the rest of our infrastructure. So MDFi offers cellular connectivity for IoT deployments around the world. So our customers get a SIM card from us, put it into their device, and we make this thing a lot more developer friendly than many of the other operators do by offering APIs to influence how the core network and the SIM cards behave. It's easier to send and receive SMS messages by REST and not by the protocols that are actually used by the core networks and so on. But to achieve this, we implemented and developed and operate our own virtualized mobile core network. So we are an MVNO, a virtual network operator, running all of that on AWS. How we support global IoT deployments, and I think most deployments nowadays are targeting a global market. Traditional operators, they route all the traffic home. So when you have a German SIM card, all the traffic goes to Germany. That's not desirable because of latency and bandwidth conditions, but also it's not desirable that an IoT device vendor engages with tens of operators across the world to solve this. So we run a distributed mobile core network on running mobile multiple AWS regions, and by that, by having this split up, we can solve this problem for our customers. And that's this infrastructure about which I'm talking today, and that's why I want to go a little bit into detail. If you don't learn anything from this talk, then maybe you learn this fun fact, how roaming traffic actually works. So in the lower layer, we see here a SIM card that is connected to a cell tower, and when this wants to reach a server in the internet, we need to show those two layers. It's like the telco world, at least in a roaming case. And on top, we see more the internet domain. And we, with our AWS deployments, we have peerings with carriers for mobile network traffic and run our packet gateways, and then that traffic is forwarded to the internet or to VPNs. Yeah, this thing on the lower side, the so-called GRX IPX network, that's a private network I have never heard before I joined MDFi about this thing. We receive 11,000 prefixes roughly from all the network operators out there. It's a private network. It looks like the internet. It works like the internet with BGP, but it's just really completely separate for the exchange of roaming traffic. And we have those three deployments, EU, Asia, and US. And so far we deployed to Europe and deploy them to the other two regions in the next months. As we become more and more critical to our customers, when we are down, then their business is usually down. We are upgrading this, so to say, from internet-based VPNs to leased lines and to two carriers instead of a single one, really to make our system a lot more reliable. These increased demands that we have regarding networking and the influence on how the network behaves, this conflicts a bit with AWS being a somewhat general purpose cloud. There is a product by AWS, Direct Connect, where you can basically plug in your fiber into an Amazon router, and then you get the traffic usually from your enterprise network or your data center into AWS. But given the conditions that we have when we are having peerings with other carriers, this isn't really usable for us in this case. So we're searching for how can we implement this in a way and move BGP logic outside of it. And the result is that we yeah, just bought good old routers instead of the most fancy software router, Linux-based switches or so, which seem to be able to do all of that at the same time. But we chose here really to have a really stable system. And we looked for, okay, what vendor can provide us something here that we can reasonably well integrate in our existing workflows and yeah, monitoring setups and so on. And then we ended up with Juniper routers. A short overview about the setup. So we have this twice per region only. In the end, it will be 6 routers. So you will probably smile now about our scale here. But that's not the point, I think, today. So we have Juniper MX204 routers, 2 of them per region, so Amsterdam and Frankfurt, as of now, in some co-location rack space, which was a fun adventure to deal with that. And then we have cross-connects to the 2 carriers, as well as cross-connects to the AWS router, where we split up via VLANs. The one is really towards our packet gateways, the user traffic. And the other thing here on the bottom, separate management VLAN in a separate AWS account, where we run our deployment and monitoring services. And I will be talking about this in the remainder of the talk. So the things that we need to solve basically to have those routers on the left hand side together with our existing environment. So configuration is stored on GitHub, Grafana for all of our observability tooling, and Ops, you need to wake us up if things go crazy. We needed to solve these problems of deploying configuration, syslog metrics, flow records, and alerting. And I will dig into most of these topics today. Design principles, basically, in some points, we didn't even know what we really need then in the end. So we tried to build more or less a minimum viable product for ourselves, where what we could achieve with a reasonable amount of time spent. And we didn't want to get too much out of our comfort zone, like getting familiar with definitely very powerful network management equipment or network monitoring applications that might be totally reasonable for you to use. But for our scale, we try to avoid a switch of tools. And we didn't want to set up anything that that could fill up disks, even if they are virtual, so that would then have to be taken care of. So how are we now deploying our configurations to these routers? One of the principles, in my opinion, is that humans shouldn't SSH into anything, especially not for changing configurations, but preferably also not for troubleshooting, at least for the regular troubleshooting cases. Instead, we should build tooling around that also people who are not the absolute domain experts could use. I'm by far not a fan of Ansible, I must say, but for this use case to push out really configuration to a device, I must say that's where it's really a nice fit using Juniper's modules that they provide themselves. And our configuration deployment looks like this. Basically, we have a parameterized configuration file, and we upload this via Ansible in the override mode, meaning that we erase all the configuration which is there and just use what's in the file, so we can avoid any configuration drift. The other interesting thing, to which I wasn't used from a Cisco world at least, a confirmed commit, meaning it applies the configuration and then Ansible continues with executing ping tests. And if Ansible fails to connect because we have locked us out of the router, for example, or if it can't ping to certain important destinations, then this Ansible run would fail and the router would automatically roll back to the previous configuration after 3 minutes. I think that's a pretty nice safety net. So that's all the magic that we have implemented for this. I'm rather sure many of you have built more sophisticated things, but this was really doable in rather short time. I have an example of how the Ansible playbook looks like. You can look this up, of course, later then. I also don't want that this is pushed from our local workstation, because easily with committing things to Git, this can get out of sync. So people must instead rely on a pipeline. We use AWS tooling for that, checks out the code, it runs Ansible in check mode, meaning that we get a diff then for approval, and then it applies this configuration. So now when I say pipeline, I would ask the question, hey, where are your tests? I mean, usually I want to have automated tests in a pipeline. And in the beginning, it looked pretty pretty good. I mean, there is in the AWS marketplace a VMX, or the virtual variant of this router. You pay $1.85 per hour to have it running. That would be super nice. This 2-star rating, this could have been mine, honestly, then looking back. The version that they offer is 1.5 years behind what we are running in production. It takes around 30 minutes to boot up. It reboots a couple of times, so you never know if this thing is finally ready set up. It's not Juniper's fault that AWS doesn't support VLANs, but I realized this only a little later that, okay, for really, yeah, connectivity tests when we emulate peers, this actually wouldn't be achievable with a limitation of AWS networking. So now we use it for manual testing, especially when we set up our monitoring infrastructure, and it's a very nice fit to quickly bring up a router with Terraform and then tear it down. I envision there could be a lot more possibilities with EFNG or GNS3 as a network emulator. There's tomorrow a talk, which means EFNG, maybe I get some additional inspiration there, how we could run even tests for link failures or so. If you have something, I'd be super happy to hear from you. Next one, routine operation, like runbook. So how do we troubleshoot the router? I have the example of a firmware update. I think Ansible playbook is a nice implementation versus a text document which says this is the playbook that you should please execute and log in and type these commands. Yeah, Ansible can do this as well, and it can tell us, okay, expect the following output, and the actual router's output is this. So we can go through this and verify that the system is really in the state as we expected. I assume even Ansible could compare those two things to just say fine, or there's a difference to what we expected. That can be tuned later, I would say. In the end, we have an interactive playbook where we say, yeah, okay, all looks fine, please proceed. And then, for example, it could continue with draining traffic. So it sets a configuration value, it activates one policy that does an AES path prepend. When traffic is drained based on our dashboards, we could say, okay, yes, please continue. And then, for example, install tuner software to do a firmware update. So this guided description of this codified process of this task that we do every couple of months, I think that is a nice achievement where people don't have to maintain code documentation. Challenges that we faced here. Can anybody tell me how we can deploy a file onto a router? We couldn't really find out something from Ansible, from the repository, to just put a file on the hard disk. That's super tough. That we used then a file copy command, but the URLs that we used were too long. It's limited to 274 characters somehow. That was a bit of pain. The other thing, yeah, we actually don't get a nice feedback when we supply an invalid config. So Ansible fails, but it doesn't say, okay, in this line, we're missing a semicolon or that. That's something where I think it would be worth to for us to spend a bit of time on it. And in general, but I think it's in the nature of Ansible, the amount of boilerplate code that we need to write. So we execute a command, and then we copy it into a register, and we display it to the user for confirmation and so on. So yeah, YAML is very verbose, I would summarize it. The second part that I want to cover is how are we monitoring this infrastructure. The relatively simple exercise is how are we getting sys logs out of the router. On the right hand side, we have Grafana, where we want our information. On the left hand side, we have the router. And also in 2020, I think our syslog is totally good for getting logs out of the router. Sorry that the animations aren't possible today. Then it would be a bit clearer. So our syslog exposes the logs, and in Fluent Bit, if you don't know it, similar to like logstash, a bit more modern, I would call it. This is received and then forwarded to Amazon CloudWatch logs, which, well, probably a service that nobody really likes, but it does its job. We can throw a handful of log lines at it, and it stores it, and we can later query it in Grafana. We don't have to take care of a full disk or of expiration of log files and things like that. Yeah, we just needed to run one container in Amazon Fargate, so the managed container service, and then this was already solved relatively quickly. Yeah, we could move on to the next topic, flow records. We want to see what's going on, NetFlow style in the network. So we are basically in a, kind of an underlay. We have IP in IP, and everything is encapsulated in GTP packets. And that's why we have around 20,000 parallel flows. And based on the simplicity of the syslog approach, we thought, okay, what if we treat like every flow just as a log line, one JSON document? Can't we build it in the same way? And we actually did it. So we said, okay, we want to have it in Amazon CloudWatch logs, because we can also query metrics out of these log files. And also on the left-hand side, okay, how do we get the syncs out of the router, IPFix, and as a collector, we have PMACCT, which in the same time also listens via the BGP monitoring protocol, so that it can, in addition to the pure flow information, can enrich it with AS path and a few other information coming from the routing process. PMACCT's standard output is then read by Fluent Bit, and yeah, it goes as before, just with a little bit more of configuration really for Fluent Bit, because what does it help when I see IPs and ports in some flow log system? I mean, that's not very user friendly, so we wanted to enrich it. And as we know, like, what protocols are we receiving? It's GDPC or GDPU. We know which organizations are involved. There's a list of all the ASs in this private network. And so basically we can hard code this in the Fluent Bit configuration, then just pick the right value and add it in addition here to this flow record. And then it becomes a lot more usable. This is in Lua, a couple of Lua functions, which basically just look some things up and then add the right field to the log entry. Dashboards that we can build out of this here in Grafana via the filters. We can nicely filter, okay, give me all the flows that come from operators in Chile. We can basically search in this line based on the ASN and the name and so on. And then we get our dashboards for this. But we can, of course, also look at the raw flow logs. So GDPC traffic, for example, can be filtered out. And we can debug, okay, what's going on here. Example query, I don't explain it by details, but that's how CloudWatch log inside looks. Which fields do we have? We filter for the host, so all of this is the implementation of the Grafana filters, and then we actually do a group by to get the amount of traffic. Challenges here, yeah, mostly regarding CloudWatch usage limits. So in first, when we loaded the Grafana dashboards, they were failing because we had many panels added, and you can only submit 4 queries at the same time. And after we asked AWS to increase these limits, which is a relatively usual procedure, and then these dashboards are loading fine. Also Grafana 7.3, which is released in a couple of weeks, will implement some queuing that this won't be a problem in the future anymore. Regarding write throughput, I think we could be relatively close to the limits of what we can actually write with these 20,000 flows per minute. Still, one thing is we can split it up into multiple log streams. That would be something how we could relax the situation. The other thing is, honestly, I mean, we are looking at Loki, the log system by Grafana, which in version 2, which was recently released, we can also build really metrics out of logs. And a colleague tried this last weekend, that looked pretty fine. Yeah, long story short, we would just replace that one storage layer and keep the rest of it as it is. PMACCT, yeah, very, very flexible. It causes some complexity. And I would say the config file format is a little bit creative or so. So we got some external help to make our lives easier here. And last but not least, bigger topic about metrics that we want to know. How is the hardware doing? How are the interfaces doing? How is our BGP peering doing? How can we get those out into Prometheus, which is the system of choice at Amnify. So if possible, we would like to store this information there. One of the reasons actually why we choose Juniper routers is the availability of Juno's telemetry. And this provides a gRPC interface where an application can subscribe to telemetry data and can receive it via gRPC really in some second intervals. And that's what actually JTIMON does, an open source project by a Juniper employee. And what we're using here, we list what sensors we want to have exposed as Prometheus metrics, and then the rest was already existing in our environment. And we have every 15 seconds then updated data with really little effort out of this router. Sure, the devil is in the detail to find out, to get it finally working. An example how this thing looks like for a single router, we see, okay, we have zero alarms, BGP peerings are all up, CPU memory is fine, BGP peerings here below, each line one peer, how many prefixes received, accepted, and so on and so on. Challenges, yeah, Juno's telemetry, the availability of sensors is increased with every single release. Also, we are on a very young release. Yeah, there are a couple of things which are not yet covered, so you should better check if this is covered or you can extend it by young templates as well. JTI-Mon somehow, it requires you that you, for every single system that you monitor, you really have to supply the complete configuration file with all the sensors you're subscribing to. I'm wondering a bit how this should scale to tens or hundreds of devices for us. I mean, that's so far fine. We also have a patch pending for JTI-Mon that a colleague fixed, that when the cases when the result isn't a number, but actually it's a string. That's so far not yet possible for Prometheus. I think it's only possible for InfluxDB. Yeah, they were waiting for feedback from the maintainer. And we had to set up a PKI, which is definitely not the first thing that you want to do when you just want to get some metrics out. But after this was solved, yeah, we have metrics coming from the router in just very the usual way as we have it with our other applications. This, to summarize it, yeah, we had the challenge to integrate some alien technology hardware into our otherwise fully AWS-based environments. And we didn't want to introduce new processes or new tooling in terms of user facing at which our colleagues have to look at for understanding the system state. And luckily, really, that's the nice thing for how this also the networking systems or community and vendors have evolved. Yeah, we were able to really bridge these gaps with, yeah, usually one container, one tiny application that had to be running just to convert basically data from the router into another form that we could consume with our usual tooling. Yeah, no guarantee that all of that works. And if you have tens or hundreds of devices, I'm certain many things will not work at your scale. For our scale, tiny scale, a couple of routers, this was really nice learning that we can fit it into how we work so far. Yeah, if you want any configuration input, also I have suggestion. I'm happy to hear from you. Also, yeah, if you want to play around, if you're bored during this lockdown and want to get a SIM card, go to mnifi.com/devs, just enter your address and we are sending you a SIM card and you can play a bit around with our system. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thanks a lot and I'm happy to discuss with you.
Thank you, Stefan, for that nice talk. To your question, there were two remarks already, which module you can use to put files on a router via Ansible. And Patrick Jans out of your company already took that up and discussed that in the chat. There are some further questions about what if a company doesn't run in a public cloud, can they still benefit from your experience?
I think certainly, I mean, keeping things simple is probably not wrong. Sure, if you have your big network management system that covers all the use cases, I think, sure, go ahead and integrate it with it. But I assume many of you have something to run containers or yes, run smaller applications on it where you don't have to spend so much time for maintaining those. Or probably, I heard Grafana already a couple of times today. I guess that's not uncommon that we wanted actually in the end all our observability in Grafana. And then I think, okay, replace CloudWatch with Loki that you're running in without your Kubernetes. And then I think the rest is basically the same.
Yeah, nice. And maybe you can elaborate a bit how you envision automatic testing of routers of router configuration changes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what I had to cut out a bit out of this talk due to time constraints. on AWS, we would have the challenge that we can't run it in a normal VM, and even G also because of nested virtualization. So we would have to run this on a bare metal host, which would be doable, of course, because we need it only for a couple of hours. But I think then if we load in our fixed topology, emulator peers, I think that's doable with built-in features of even G or GNS3. And then I hope it's really possible via the APIs or CLIs or so to interact with this network emulator and disable just every single link that we have and ensure that we have still our traffic flowing. That's how I would actually imagine something that we really can execute before we are doing bigger changes. Because that a secondary link is down, you usually realize this only when you need it.
Okay, yeah, thank you. And one last question before having that done. How did you solve the alerting?
That's just regular Prometheus alerting, meaning when we have the matrix in Prometheus, we can in Alert Manager just add rules like we do it for the other applications. Like if the BGP or if the link is down for longer than an hour or so, if this rule is, so to say, triggering or firing, then this goes via Alert Manager. So far, we didn't alert on logs yet.
Okay, there's another quick one. Why don't you buy a cheap router like an MX80 or a QFX?
The MX204 was cheaper than I expected it for a 100G platform. So I'd be interested in chatting with you in private. But I looked at the MX4 and MX8 or something like that. Yeah, and I think because of the modularity, those were a lot more expensive than what we had to pay for the 204, which is not extensible via line card. Has one routing engine and so on. But if you drop me a message in person, I'd be interested, of course, in understanding like what price tag are we talking for the alternatives.
Okay, thank you, Stefan.
I would say.
thank you, Stefan. He will be around at the meeting, and as he already stated, if you have any other question, please, go ahead, ask him directly, and thank for participating in this call. Bye bye.
Bye.